investigating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Trust no one. Trust no one. Trust no one.
Thanks ever so much for joining us today in the Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. Still got a little bit of a voice strangeness, if you're hearing it. I've been sick again for about a week and a half now. My whole family again has been sick for a bit now. It's like the second sickness in this year, which is kind of odd for me. But I think it's more allergy than anything. Nonetheless, I don't want to get off on that jag. Bottom line, my voice sounds a little strange, but I'm doing better. So I'm here with you in the Anomic Age. I want to thank you for joining us today. AnomicAge.com. Share that link with friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. In case you haven't already done that, please do so. We also have the donate button at the bottom right. If you would like to donate to the Anomic Age, I highly recommend it. Please do so. This program does not run on mere love and energy alone. It definitely takes quite a bit of work. So please, AnomicAge.com. You can go to the PayPal button down there at the bottom. You can also go directly to paypal.me/AnomicAge and just donate directly there if you want to. And there's also a new button. We got a Patreon button on the Anomic Age right about now. So if you want to become a Patreon member, I highly recommend it. Please, please do so. Again, this thing's not cheap. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of monies and a whole lot of work. So if you are so inclined, you can check out the new Patreon button as well, and you can make it a monthly donation. You can adjust it however you want. There's a bottom line for like a dollar, I believe, and you can go all the way up to 10 bucks. So, and you can do more if you want to, if you're so inclined, by all means. But nonetheless, not to belabor that point, there's also a newsletter link below the donate buttons. You can check out information about me. There's a nice RSS feed that's got all kinds of news, and that's going to be changing a little bit, the RSS feed. Anyway, once I get all those technical hoops jumped through, that feed will change and become a little bit more congruent, because right now it's driving me nuts. We got some images that keep duplicating in the RSS feed, and it's completely enraging. So we're working on it. Going back to that, this ain't cheap thing. Yeah. So there's all that as well. You can go to the guest media section, and you can check out all the information about our guests as far as how to get a hold of them, where to find them, and more information about them. You can do that too. And you can check out just the latest episodes if you want to do that. That's easy to do from AnomicAge.com. So, share the link. That's the most important thing you can do. Just share the link with everyone, anyone that you want. Some twists and turns in today's episode. We could go the direct route and just do the news segment. Or we could sort of branch off a little bit and I guess kind of by default do what I do. I mean, this show is definitely a show to learn. And if you're not learning from me, hopefully you're learning from our guests. But for better or worse, by default, I teach. So I thought, this thing's been nagging me a bit, just sort of thinking, what the heck is wrong with everybody? Why is everybody a zombie? Why aren't more people acting? Why aren't people, as I always say, you can't do everything, but you can do something. Why isn't that person doing something? Why isn't this person doing something? Where's that person? Why aren't they doing something? Like, where are the people in the proverbial fight? And I'm not talking a sticks and stones, nor automatic weapons and bombs kind of fight. I hope it never gets to that. But why aren't people just doing the obvious stuff? It's been bothering me. And I know why. In my gut, I know why. Based on all the knowledge I've accrued in life, I know why. based on all that Cult of Academia knowledge, I know why. So it occurred to me, I taught all this stuff years back. And why don't I just talk about it in this show? I'll try not to make it a class experience. But perhaps that's what people need from time to time. Perhaps some people just need to go through the steps, so to speak, to figure out what the heck is going on and to understand that we have been under assault. The powers that be, the Illuminati, the elites, the deep state, whatever silly little name you want to put on these people, they know the things that I'm about to tell you. They've known these things for a long time. They've used things like psychology, propaganda, media manipulation, these things that perhaps many of you are beginning to awaken to now. These things are old hat. They are very old hat. So, if nothing else in this episode, I'm just going to do what I do and try to inform and enlighten people as to what the heck's really going on in case you missed it. You know, I always kind of say that, you know, I don't mean to be, but in somewhat of a sarcastic tone. In case you missed it, you know, this thing, the elephant in the room, has been walking around the room, defecating everywhere, breaking the furniture, and otherwise just harming the general citizenry. It's been going on for a while. In case you missed it, you know, you might want to stand up and do something about it. Most people are not doing that. So I'm trying to figure out why. I know why. So I thought, hey, let's see if we can inform. And maybe other people will realize, hey, you know, I'm in this gilded cage of my own making. I don't have to be here. I can unlock the door, flap my wings, and fly away. Meaning you can do something to stop the downward spiral that we're headed. You think? I do. So let's get into it a little bit. I've chosen some very obvious theorists and mainly psychologists that have been shaping the minds of the general public for a long time. I'll start out with a little bit of a quote from a movie that many people call a documentary and not a bit of fiction at all, but The Matrix. The Matrix came out in 1999. It's kind of ironic. I saw the movie theater that I saw that film in. I saw that film by myself. A lot of people don't go to movies by themselves or think there's some sort of stigma to that, but I went and saw that movie by myself. I can't believe that. Apparently in 1999. But I saw that they're tearing down that movie theater as we speak. It's probably already rubble by now, but here's a quote from that film, and I think it's very apropos and sort of speaks to a lot of the things that I'm going to get into today. It says, "The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters, the very minds of the people we're trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system. And that makes them our enemy. We have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so injured, so helplessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it." I could read that again. I could underscore about 10 different elements of that. They will fight to protect it. I think that's something worth that last closing statement there. That's where a lot of people are in this whole thing. So when you look at the communists and you wonder what's going on, why are they so fouled up? Why can't they be reached? I've mentioned this on a few shows now. I'm sure people are tired of hearing it or think I'm just being especially morose when I say you can't help a lot of these people. They're beyond help. You can push them aside and try to triage people that you can help. Sort of the same tenets you would go as if you went into a mass casualty situation. Some of the same elements are what people need to take from a very real situation and put it into this very real situation that we're in. So many of these people don't want to be helped. They're not ready to be unplugged. They're so injured and so messed up. You can't help them. And they will fight you to stay in that system. So that's where a lot of I'd say most of our society is. And people aren't grasping that. So a lot of people are sort of gobsmacked and awestruck. Like, what the heck is, what are these people? So, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. Here's why. Because this is an old system. Nothing new under the sun. Remember that one? Yeah, nothing new under the sun. Says King Solomon and says John as well. We got classical conditioning. Classical conditioning from Ivan Pavlov, a Russian scientist. He did the usual Pavlov's dog experiments. He did a lot more than that, but the Pavlov's dog experiments, he did just that. Classical conditioning. So that's something that we could definitely examine quite a bit. So if you look at classical conditioning, that just pairs two stimuli. While operant conditioning, which we'll get into in a moment, that's pairing behavior and response, but two stimuli. So you're looking at classical conditioning. That's what Ian Pavlov was doing with Pavlov's dog, and he was showing these dogs to treat a stimuli, and they would start salivating, another stimuli. So that's that obvious example. But you can look at that in our own society. So we've been so bombarded with this stuff for so long that people just aren't getting it. But when you see the stimuli on the mainstream news, you see everywhere you look. You could look at the Trump example where they have images of Trump and they always have negative connotations to it. So you got your stimuli, image of Trump. What's your stimuli? Your brain's immediately, for a vast majority of the population, just echoing these parroting points that you've already heard over and over and over and over and over and over again. So you don't have to say them yourself. Your brain is already conditioned to that. Your brain's already going, okay, he's racist. You got no proof. You got no nothing. But your brain is already clicking on that gear, so to speak. You can look at the same thing with the 9/11 disaster, where you saw the planes hitting the buildings over and over again, over and over again. We talked about this before, where those images trigger that fight or flight response. It triggers the chemicals in the brain to start working. It triggers this ingrained fear and this ingrained notions that a lot of things we'll get into in a little bit, but this learned helplessness, we'll get into that too. But you saw the stimuli of the planes, and that immediately starts your brain doing things that you're not even cognizant of. It starts your brain triggering these factors and these notions of ingraining this fear and that helplessness, which we'll get into. But I mean, that's just one of these things. When you look at that old Pavlov's dog experiment, a lot of people think, oh, that's whatever, you know? And then you got other folks like John Watson. He's working on behaviorism. He was a guy that did these kind of, in my humble opinion, disturbing, at the very least, experiments with a young child he would call Albert. So he would show the child different things. He would show the child fire, monkey, dog, rabbit, rat, and so forth. And then when he saw the rat, he then began to introduce this alarm, this horrible sound that would cause the child fear. And it would just, you know, it would ingrain this notion that every time he saw the rat that he should be afraid, whether he heard the sound or not. So you got this behavior going on. And it's basically just forming generalizations. And it's forming this notion of, oh, I should be afraid because this behavior has taught me this. This conditioning has taught me this. So again, you see the same thing in our current society. You see, oh, we see this big red fear Trump, you know, fear the orange man, bad, you know. That sort of silly tweet that you keep seeing, orange man bad, orange man bad. I mean, they've dumbed it down and made it this little monosyllabic, almost orange man bad. I mean, they've made it as silly, as juvenile as possible for good reason. Because they're conditioning you to fear. That's what that's about. They may as well substitute Albert for the general public, and they may as well substitute the rat for the image of Trump, and they may as well substitute that alarm, that buzzer, horrible sound for the MSM, because that's exactly what people are getting. They're getting that behavior. They're getting that learned behavior. So after a while, you don't even have to have the mainstream media giving you those alarm bells. Orange man bad, orange racist, misogynist, homophobe, xenophobe, all these. You don't have to hear these words anymore. Your brain clicks in when they see the image of Trump, orange man bad. You don't hear the stimuli anymore. Your brain has been conditioned to it. See what I'm saying? Are you feeling me on this? Are you understanding, I hope, what the heck is going on? I'm trying to make this, you know, as slow as possible and as easy here. But, you know, that's classical conditioning. Then we're going to move in the operant conditioning here in a moment, where we're going to pair behavior and response. So here's where we're actually going to see a stimuli evoking a response. You're going to do something now. That's it. You're going to do something. These silly notions that you always hear the communists trot out there, like, well, if you were in early 1930s Germany and you knew Hitler was going to be Hitler, you would be, you know, compelled to kill him. Yeah. So here's where we get into that operant conditioning, where we actually see people moved to, dare I say, action. And that's with old B.F. Skinner, another psychologist who was working with, again, a lot of things. But the folks that I'm talking about here, I'm just going to touch on one thing that they're bringing to the table. So Skinner was looking at operant conditioning and looking at pigeons. He was looking at pigeons. He had these Skinner box studies he would look at, where the pigeon would see food and he would see another stimuli and a mirror and a light and all these other things. And the pigeon would be operantly conditioned to react to the stimuli. So, you know, it's you hear the bell and you peck this thing and you're going to get the treat and you're going to get the treat. So after a while, the pigeons began to change their behavior when they thought it correlated with the reward. So if they hit this lever every time and the little pellet drops out, they're going to know, we need to hit this pellet we need to hit this lever and the pellet's going to drop out. Or if we need to peck at this light over here and the pellet's going to drop out. Or if we peck this black circle, nothing happens. So we're not going to peck the black circle anymore. We're going to go with the light and the lever because that's where the food pellets are coming in. So we're seeing this operant conditioning. Basically, they begin to have a false correlation because they think, okay, every time I hit this lever, something's going to happen, but it begins to not happen. But that doesn't matter to the pigeon because they're going to keep hitting that button until it happens again. Even if it's only going to drop a pellet out once every 10th time they hit this button, they're going to keep hitting it. Even though they know it's not going to happen, they're going to keep on going with that. That's going to be the operant conditioning I'm talking about, people. So that's what we're seeing also. You know, people are getting the classical and they're getting the operant. It's the same thing. They're seeing a reward for their bad behavior within our culture right now. They're seeing a reward because when they see that picture of Trump, they're going to have to go, oh, orange man bad, in their brain, even if they don't say it with their mouth. And they know when they go out into the culture that the whole culture has become so super saturated with this mental illness, they know that they're not going to get any social capital, any love, if you will, any quan within the culture. If you go out into a setting like academia, or you go out into one of these communist-run cities, you're not going to get any sort of social capital if you go out there and speak the opposite of that. So it's just like that pigeon. That pigeon knows, you know, they know what to do. They know they're going to hit this button. Even if they're not getting the treat right now, they know they're going to go out there and keep saying the same thing. Orange man bad. Orange man bad. Orange man bad. That's the same sort of conditioning that we're seeing right here with these people. It's really bizarre. Another man I'd like to talk about is Solomon Ash, who I just kind of call it follow the leader. That's what I effectively refer to it as. He did a lot of tests with people just doing that, with following the leader, no matter what. And one of the things he was doing was he was doing these line tests, where subjects would go in, and there would be a series of lines, and they would say, well, which line is the longest, or which line is the shortest, or which one matches this pattern or that pattern? And the person conducting the experiment would say, oh, no, that's wrong. Even though it was right, they would say, oh, no, that's wrong. It's this. It's that. It's this. And it was called a visual perception test. And it would test the conformity with lines. And eventually the subject would comply with the wrong answer to stay part of the group. Again, that's exactly what we're seeing now with the operant conditioning, with the classical conditioning, and with the people beginning to change what they think just to fit in with the group. Remember, they want to get that social capital. They want to get the attaboy and the pat on the back when they go to the academia, when they go to the mall, when they go to the doctor's office. They don't want to be the outlier that says, no, wait a minute, Trump's actually doing the right thing here. He's trying to regulate the borders. He's trying to work out fair trade deals with some of these communist countries. He's trying to say we should put America first. No, 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 no. Remember, if you're one of these aforementioned areas, most likely you've got to do just what Ash was saying. You've got to do the conformity. You've got to conform to the incorrect answer just so you get the attaboy, just so you get the pat on the back. Because you want to be part of the group, remember? You don't want to make waves. You want to be part of the group. Speaking of group, Irving Janis was the one bringing us groupthink. Yeah, that's a term that gets tossed out quite a bit. It's basically, it's a tendency of groups to minimalize conflict and just basically go along to get along. That's pretty much what we're talking about here. Without testing or analyzing anything, we're just going to say, okay, well, sure, we'll just go along to get along. We'll conform with the group no matter what. That's okay. We'll just do that because we don't want to make waves. We don't want to cause problems. We don't want to be the outlier here. And it's this cinema did a lot of work with veterans, with soldiers that would sort of default to this groupthink in lieu of causing problems within the regiment or the ranks of the military. They would say, okay, well, sure, I know this is outlandish and that's not going to work, but in a stressful situation in a combat zone, they are going to oftentimes resort to groupthink. That groupthink just takes over and say, okay, well, we don't need to go around this corridor. We need to double back and head in the opposite direction. But everybody else is saying so, well, let's try it. Everyone gets killed or injured, but let's try it, okay? You're just ignoring the alternatives and going with irrational actions that you don't necessarily believe oftentimes. But just, again, as a consequence to not rock the boat, to go along to get along. You don't want to cause problems. You got to do that. It's going to be okay. You can just say Trump's bad. It doesn't matter if you believe it or not. You want to get that A, right? You want to be in the good graces. You want to get that recommendation. So you better just button up and go along to get along, right? Of course. Which brings us into another one with the Stanley Milgram conformity studies. More conformity, more conformity. So one of the things Milgram focused on was the Nuremberg trials and folks like Adolf Eichmann. He was in charge of logistically deporting Jews into camps. And it's the old line, just following orders, just following orders, just conforming, just following orders. It's okay, right? Just stand down, police. The communists are here to wreak havoc in your city and beat up patriots. Just follow orders. And that's exactly what we see happen every single time. And this is one of those studies a lot of people have actually heard of. Because the studies with this involved a participant coming in, and it was usually a leader or someone conducting the experiments, and then there was a third party that was basically the one that would be getting the shocks. So you would have someone asking questions to the person behind a booth, behind a glass, and you would escalate the amount of electrical shock that they would be receiving. And you'd start out at a low voltage, they could barely feel it, and all the way up to a lethal dose. And keep in mind, in this instance, unlike the Albert studies that we talked about in the beginning, the person wasn't actually getting shocked. He would just writhe, in pain and pretend that the shocks were escalating and getting worse and worse and worse. And the point is here that 65% gave the massive lethal dose of electricity because the person overseeing it would always say, oh, that's no big deal. Just keep on doing it. Just keep on doing it. Just keep on shocking him. It's okay. Oh, well, no. Well, he's writhing. He's in pain. He's screaming him on. Oh, it doesn't matter. Just keep doing it. Keep doing it. 65% gave that massive dose. I can't believe it was that low. I think if they redid that now, it'd be like upwards of 90% easy. Easy. Because you see that all the time. Every city in America that's had Antifa roll through almost without question. The police have done the same thing. They've done the same thing. They've just followed orders. The Adolf Eichmann, just following orders. Yeah, Antifa's here. I got a pension and family to where I'm not going to just upset the apple cart. I'm not going to risk my job. I'm going to keep letting these communists destroy the city and beat people to death. Or at least beat people into hospital. I'm just following orders. Got to go along to get along. Remember all the things we just talked about? You're seeing the same thing again and again. I'm just pointing out where it's coming from because a lot of people aren't connecting these dots. Another one. This one's widely regarded as the Stanford Prison Experiments by Philip Zimbardo. And this is a famous one as well. And this looks at more of the same, more people just conforming to their expected role. And what he did, he had to call off the study early because it was supposed to last for much longer. I don't even think it lasted a week. But what he did is he had students who participated in this, and they were supposed to take on the role of prisoners and take on the role of guardsmen in a mock prison scenario. And what he found is that people conform to the expectations or to the stereotypes pretty easy. I mean, it didn't even last a week, and you already had the people that were the supposed prison actors began acting like the prisoners. They had the uniforms on, and the guard folks had their uniforms on. So that uniform, in both instances, gave them a bit of anonymity. It gave them that cover. It gave them that, this is what I'm supposed to do, this is how I have to act. So the guards began acting very hostile to the prisoners and began getting violent in such a way that he had to call it off. And likewise, the prisoners began acting unruly and bad, just as the expectations would be for a prison population to act, so to speak. So again, you see that rampant in our own culture. People just take on the persona of what they believe or perceive the societal expectation or stereotype there is all the time. This is just more ground ball stuff. Nothing crazy here, just more ground ball stuff. Which brings us to that cognitive dissonance. That cognitive dissonance by Leon, excuse me, my throat, Festinger. Once again, looking at that cognitive dissonance, that inability to reconcile these two different things. People, this is one of the ones that I think is most rampant in our culture because you have folks. I always roll out sort of the same examples with the TSA. People will go through the TSA checkpoints. They'll get molested by a stranger. I mean, I always jokingly say people every day are going to the airport letting a complete stranger go to third base. And they don't seem to get it. They're going through the cancer device that's going to give you an image over your entire person. You're going through a cancer x-ray device that's giving you cancer. But they don't grasp that. At the very least, they're just going through the metal detector. And they're forced through this indignity of taking their shoes off, their belt off. They may as well strip down and go through this thing prison style. Speaking of the Zimbardo material from a moment ago. But yeah, people are doing this and they don't grasp the cognitive dissonance of it. They don't grasp that the American public is going through this. But yet you got thousands streaming through the border. No checks. No nothing. No border closure. Nothing's really happening. It's no big deal. To quote Bill Murray from Caddyshack, it's no big deal. That's what's up. That's what we're doing in our culture. The cognitive dissonance. They can't reconcile these two completely asinine concepts. That the American public is forced to go through the prison training of the airport security. But thousands every year. That's a conservative. You could probably say hundreds of thousands, if not millions at this point in the game, are streaming through constantly. It's really silly, isn't it? You would think. I think so. And this one, well, this is another one you can sort of piggyback these two with the cognitive dissonance. I'll want to harp on this some more before I move on. The cognitive dissonance is so disgusting to me. because you have parents and the general populace just doing the same stupid mess, the same sort of stuff. And I think it piggybacks in with this learned helplessness that we'll talk about. And the cognitive dissonance meaning, you know, this is what I hear all the time. We've all got to die of something. You all got to die of something. That's why I'm just going to keep eating GMO and drinking a six-pack and smoking my weed and doing all this other garbage. We all got to die of something, right? Yeah. What about your kids? Well, we're still going to vaccinate. I've heard this talk, and we're still going to vaccinate. Yeah, you're an idiot. But, okay, your cognitive dissonance is still, you know, you're not seeing what's going on, apparently. But it plays into the learned helplessness, is what I believe. That's Martin Seligman. And he did a whole deal with learned helplessness, and he was looking at, I think it was primarily dogs. There could have been some cats, but I believe it was dogs. And he would have them on a metal, basically a metal pan that would give them shock. And what he would learn is they would fight and resist for a bit. And eventually, the animal would just lay down and get shocked. They basically learned that they couldn't get out of that situation. So they just laid down and took it. They just laid down and kept getting shocked. It's the absence of control, or the perceived absence of control. If you can't change it over time, you just give up. And I think that's where a lot of people are. I think that piggybacks very appropriately with what I was mentioning earlier with the cognitive dissonance. I think a vast majority of the populace is in this learned helplessness. There's this whole like, oh, you can't fix City Hall. You can't keep your kid from dying of cancer. You can't keep him from getting autism. You can't keep from getting cancer. You know, it's this whole absentee landlord of one's own life that I feel that most of us are in. It drives me nuts. It drives me absolutely nuts. So, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this other than I hope all these things that we've discussed today, if nothing else, give you quite a bit of food for thought and hopefully connect a lot of dots and webs of dots together, because everything that I mentioned, admittedly, in a very cursory fashion, I mean, you could look into each one of these individuals and their studies and spend days, if not months, on their work, because it was so complex and so impactful. And as I said before, the people in the know, the proverbial puppet masters, know all this and then some. I mean, we haven't scratched the surface of social engineering and controlling a population, but you might want to check it out. Please, avail yourselves of the truth. Please do. So, I won't belabor this point anymore. I'll just say, please, check out anomicage.com. Share the links with your friends, family, loved ones, and enemies. If you can, make a donation. Check out the Patreon. And hold on to your hats, because we'll see you in just a mere matter of moments with our guest. Stick around until then. It is my distinct pleasure to welcome Virginia Krieger into the Anomic Age today. Virginia is an angel mom who lost her only daughter, Tiffany, in 2015, in large part due to flawed U.S. policies on immigration and border security. A former fraud analyst, she now devotes her time to educating the public about the very real dangers of the poorly secured borders and flawed immigration policies that have negatively impacted families and communities nationwide, and promoting common sense legislation to protect and secure American children and families. Thank you so much, Virginia. We talked quite a bit off the show. I'm glad we're talking on the show now.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Most certainly. I'm very happy to have you on the program. And bear with my voice in case it goes crazy. I think I'll pull through, but just in case.
Okay.
This is such a tough thing to discuss. I know we talked a little off the air, but I'm just kind of let you lead the way on this one, because I'm very sensitive to your situation. And I got to say, I can't even imagine. My wife and I often talk, you know, after and before and whatever the shows. And often she's like, man, how do you do this? And just because a lot of these topics that I've discussed with various guests, I mean, they're not the flower and sunshine, everything's great stories. They're more, I just call them reality stories in this bizarro world that we live in. But I can't even fathom. I will say that I can't even fathom what you've gone through and are still continuing to go through with the loss of your daughter. So I'll just sort of hand the reins over to you and say, take it away. I'll talk as much as you want me to.
Okay, well, feel free to jump in and ask questions.
Oh, I certainly will. I promise to do that.
I wanted to start just by sharing Tiffany's story.
Sure.
Tiffany was my only daughter. In fact, she was my oldest child. And she was a very talented, intelligent, bright young woman. At 16, and that was the required age, she made it through to the semifinals on American Idol twice. She was a composer and a musician and also a very extremely good vocalist. Hmm. She was a leader within our community, a student leader. She was the chapter leader for SAD in her high school. She coordinated and put together yellow ribbon campaigns for our troops during 9/11 or not after 9/11 mm-hmm. and their activation. And she also led several Red Cross drives. In fact, the last one that she did filled an entire warehouse with supplies for hurricane victims. And I believe it was Florida for that one.
Okay.
So she'd always been one of those people who would be there to help. That was just something that she did. She came to Ohio for 2 weeks to visit relatives on her way to Florida State. She graduated a year early and had already finished her first year of college by the time she turned 18. And she was majoring in music and she wanted to be a teacher. So she came back, and what often happens with people and like young people is she fell in love. And I feel like in her case, it was more that she was afraid of going from the little pond into the big one, because state college is a lot different than the community college that she had been in.
Mm-hmm.
So she ended up wanting to take a year off, and she stayed here with this new relationship. While she was here, she fell through a porch, and she injured 3 discs in her back. And that was right about the time that all of a sudden this news had broken about the heroin and fentanyl epidemic. Specifically at that point, it was heroin and prescription drugs. And they called it an opioid epidemic. But I'm here to tell you, we never had an opioid epidemic. I know this now. There was no significant increase in prescription-related deaths. What we did have was a 500%+ increase in the number of heroin-related deaths. And fentanyl was just starting to rear its head. This is in 2014. So after she'd fallen through the porch, she was under the care and treatment of a physician. And as physicians came under attack by legislators, and they started to pass laws dictating patient care, what happened, the response from the medical community was to push these patients out of their offices and into pain clinics. The problem being that there weren't enough appointments available to handle a massive influx of thousands of patients all at once. So people were waiting 6, 12, there were waits of up to 5 months for them to be seen. So now we have a gap in care. And this is what happened with Tiffany. She was told she had to go to the pain clinic. Her appointment was 3 months. In the meantime, these physicians refused to prescribe for their patients who they had been giving narcotic pain medications, in her case, for a very valid reason. So at any rate, a couple of her friends said, oh, this is the same thing. You know, this will help you. And they obtained and they administered heroin to my daughter. The heroin was laced with fentanyl. And as my daughter lay suffocating in a back room, they spent hours going back and forth to the ATM, robbing her. going back the last time after the coroner had come and taken her lifeless body. In her case, there was no investigation. The police didn't treat it as manslaughter, which they should have. There were no charges filed against these women, and not even for the theft. And so what I had done is I spent a year talking to one of the women to get her confession. And I finally got enough that I flew out here to Ohio. I was living in Colorado at the time. And I met with the city prosecutor, and we were able to at least charge her for the theft. The bad thing is that she served 28 days for taking my daughter's life. And she was released. The other woman never served any time. She was never even questioned again after the first day. So I can't even begin to tell you how much I learned about the failures of our justice system, the failures of our border security agents to stop these drugs. I wanted to learn everything about them, and what I've found has been more disappointing than I can even explain to anyone. Everything I thought to be wasn't. All these fantasies I had about how things worked in the United States were wrong. So I set on a journey to find out how these drugs got to my daughter. How did they get here? What brought this all together? And so it's been a 4-year journey. And the startling facts I've learned upon them on the way are what I'm trying to inform the public about. The first thing being that the heroin present in the United States, which has driven these deaths, we're averaging 50,000 lives lost every single year. The DEA has acknowledged that 91.6% of this heroin is Mexican in origin. Mexico is home to the third largest poppy fields in the world, a fact I didn't know. The rise in these drugs started in 2014 when Obama reinstated catch and release, and cartel members from specifically the Sinaloa drug cartel took advantage of those policies and brought in their members into our country where they set up shop. And now the Sinaloa cartel is present in every state, every county, and every city in the United States. And the former domestic drug market that we had for what they would call black tar heroin and other types of drugs they've been shut down. I've spoken with sheriff departments and drug enforcement agents. They're not busting these drug cookhouses anymore because they don't exist. The Mexicans have fully taken over the drug operations here in the United States. The problem being that the drugs that they make are deadly. They're more potent than anything we've ever seen. The type of heroin that they're peddling is called Mexican White, and it's 5 times stronger than anything that they've ever seen on the market before. And the fentanyl that everyone talks about, a lot of people think prescription when they hear fentanyl. We are not talking about prescription fentanyl. We're talking about illicit lab-created fentanyl. And the Mexicans have now entered into this. I don't want to say Mexicans in general. I mean the cartel members when I say that.
Okay.
The cartels are now manufacturing this too in their own labs. In fact, they just busted a major lab right in the city hall of Sinaloa, Mexico. Mexico is a failed narco state, and it's fully run and infiltrated by the cartels, and they are now bringing that here. And our border agents, they are not getting the support that they need, and these sanctuary city policies that have been put in place are protecting these cartel members so that they can continue poisoning our cities and our children with these killer drugs. And I can't stress enough how serious this has become. We have lost more people in the last 4 years than we lost during the entire World War I and the entire Vietnam War combined. This is essentially, in my opinion, chemical warfare that has been launched against us. And these aren't throwaway people. These are not what you would picture in your mind when you would think of a heroin user of, you know, like the 60s, some back alley, you know, lost person. These are people from good families that have good jobs. We have doctors and lawyers and people who are educated, and they've fallen into this trap. And because of the highly addictive quality of these narcotics, they're dying. And the life expectancy for one of these type of users is 12 years. So it's not, even if they don't die with the first use, like Tiffany did, continued use, they will degrade over time, and the toll it takes on their organs and their bodies. The average lifespan is only 12 years. Meanwhile, you know, the victims people don't talk about are the children. My daughter had two children that I am now helping to raise. So we have grandparents raising grandchildren. Our foster care systems are flooded with the neglected children of addicts and the orphan children who are left behind. And this is something that people aren't talking about either. So we have communities that have been completely ravaged, and people who are dying and children being left behind. And yet our legislators, particularly the Democrats, and I'm going to just say it, the Democrats know this is going on. They know about these numbers, and they still resist border security, and they continue to try to tie it with immigration. And they are two separate issues, and they know they're two separate issues. So our stance is that we have to secure this border, and we need to get these cartels under control before we are another Mexico. I can't, when we're looking at a number, 250,000 people have died in 4 years. That is the largest loss of life from a single cause in American history. And it's something that nobody's talking about. So I'm here to tell these families that your children would be here if these drugs had not been allowed to get into this country in the first place, and that we need to secure the border. We need to have proper vetting of the immigrants who are coming here to ensure that we're not bringing in these cartel members. And, you know, we're starting to try to get numbers together as I speak on the victims that didn't die. The victims of the shootings and the other violent crimes associated with these cartel members. And I don't have specifics, but I know those numbers are going to be huge. And so this thing is just ballooning out of control, and we don't know what to do other than to get out there and try to warn the public and tell them this is happening in your neighborhood and your children aren't safe anymore. So that's kind of where I'm at. Currently, we're working on legislature to have the cartels named terrorist organizations, something that we're working on the federal level. We've gotten a resolution passed here in Ohio to do that, but we'd like to get that put forward on a federal level that will free up the resources we need in order to be able to fight these cartels. We also are pushing for the border to be fully secured so that we can x-ray these vehicles coming in and out of the country and look for these hidden drugs and these human traffic victims. They hide in compartments within their vehicles in ways that are shocking. And we want to take it a step further. We'd like to try eventually, if it's possible, to get our government to work with the government of Mexico and restore these people's homes to them that are fleeing the brutality and violence of these cartels. These are our neighbors, and we have a responsibility to help them get rid of this cancer that has completely corrupted their government and their police and their military, that makes life so unbearable that they're leaving. These things shouldn't be happening. And I can't understand how Nancy Pelosi can stand up and say this is a manufactured crisis when the bodies of our children are piling up And you can't hide those headstones. And that's why I make a point of putting my daughter's headstone on a lot of my tweets and a lot of my posts, because I want people to see that this is real. This isn't manufactured. These are the damages happening to American citizens as a result of these failed and flawed policies being put forth by politicians who aren't living the consequences of their choices. Another thing we're working on is trying to make sanctuary cities accountable for releasing violent criminals, known violent criminals, rather than turning them over to ICE. So we're trying to get legislature passed, and they just had a hearing on it yesterday on Capitol Hill to be able, for victims to be able to sue the cities for the damages to their and loss of life being caused by these policies. They shared one case that was the most disturbing to me of all, was a repeat violent offender who was picked up by ICE for the rape of an 11-year-old child. This happened in North Carolina.
I hate to say my state again, the formerly great state of North Carolina, continuing to allow this to happen. Sorry.
When they released him, he went and he got the same little girl again and kidnapped her, and he raped her again. And they finally had to work with ICE, because not because they wanted to, but because that the public outcry was so severe that they couldn't not. But what we have are city officials making decisions that are changing the lives of Americans. We're not talking about asylum seekers here. We're talking about criminals, criminals who broke the laws to come here, who break the laws once they're here, and are hurting people and killing people. And they should be accountable across the board. You know, we're not trying to go take out the mother who's, you know, came here for a job and take care of her children. Although I have my own opinions about, you know, people legally coming here.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not who we're targeting. And yet, you know, I still get a lot of backlash because we're victims. My family has been changed forever. I have been separated from my child forever. Her children have been separated from their mother forever. And this is something that the Democrats don't even want to acknowledge. Not one of them has sat down to talk with me. I have gone to their offices in person. I have sent them letters. They don't want to hear from me. They don't want to hear from any of the Angel families. And why not? Why would they not want to sit down and have these discussions if they truly are for the people, as they say? Because they aren't for the people. In my opinion, they're just trying to bring in another group of uneducated voters.
Yeah, they're for their special interest.
Well, yeah. And sometimes I have to wonder if they're not benefiting from this. They just stopped 2 days ago in Orange County, California. They just confiscated 100 pounds of illicit fentanyl. And just so you understand, it only takes 3 grains. I mean,
I'm sorry, I just lost you there for a second.
Smaller than rice to kill you.
I lost it. 3 grains. I'm sorry. Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. I you cut off there at 3 grains. I didn't want anybody to miss what you were saying.
3 grains smaller than a grain of rice. And I mean the 3 grains combined are still smaller than a grain of rice to kill you. And they confiscated 100 pounds. That was enough to kill millions. Millions. One of my concerns, and it's a very valid concern, is that they have a mass shipment like that and somebody dumps it into the water supply. And this is a security risk that they refuse to acknowledge. They refuse to even discuss. The thing about fentanyl is that it's addictive after a single use. If you survive and you don't die, then you will suffer withdrawals symptoms the very next day, which is why we're finding fentanyl in marijuana. We're finding it in heroin. We're finding it in methamphetamines. And the methamphetamines have become really bad. And, you know, there's been talk that they found it dusted on hallucinogenic mushrooms. So their goal is to get as many people addicted as possible so they have those repeat customers. And, you know, a lot of people try to say it's the dealers. No, this is coming straight from the cartel. This is what they're doing. And I'm not even going to begin to talk about the human trafficking associated with these same cartels. But when we have 300,000 children a year missing who are labeled as runaways, even though there's no evidence that they've run away, but rather that these preteens and teens who vanish unless it's a known abduction are listed as being runaways. So where are the children? Where are these 300,000 children every single year? And why isn't this part of the topic of conversation? The U.S. Sentencing Commission just put forth numbers that of the illegal aliens in custody, they committed, are you ready for this?
I don't think they so, but sure.
8% of the population, they committed over 67% of all crimes. 67%, and 42.4% of those crimes were kidnapping. So,
and then you have to weigh in the fact that then we have to prosecute these people, house these people, jail these people. I mean, the expense doesn't end. So, I mean, just go, okay, we've arrested this child molesting criminal piece of scum. Now we've got to try him and house him and feed him, and then he gets medical. It's a whole nine yards here.
Yeah. And the thing is, and this is one of the greatest talking points of the left when they talk about illegal immigrants and crime. They like to say, oh, well, they don't commit that many crimes. Well, what they fail to tell anybody is that nobody was tracking the immigration status. Luckily, the U.S. Sentencing Commission does. They're the only organization that has been. So they actually have data on this. And 68% of all crimes, despite making up only 8% of the population, that's huge. But it gets even worse when you have these groups saying that they commit less crimes because our own legal system has actually hidden the real numbers. It is easier for these attorneys to make a case for deportation and many times rather than the criminal case for the crimes they've committed. So what they'll do is they'll make the deportation case and probably succeed. But we've lost those numbers on the crimes, the violent crimes that brought them to, you know, that deportation hearing in the first place. So what happened, I was just in Washington, D.C., and the National Sheriff's Association was with us we had a rally and we had meetings on Capitol Hill with many different politicians to talk about these issues. And one of the things that they're going to start doing is keeping track of these crimes and the immigration status personally, because nobody else is tracking it. And that way, even if they are not having the charges officially filed with the other agencies because they made a deportation case, it's going to give us true numbers as to how many and what kind of crimes we're looking at. And I think that's something really important that has fallen through the cracks. I did my own study. I was shocked to find that here in Ohio, we have 8 sanctuary cities. So using from the Bureau of Health Statistics, using their data, I did a comparison study on they became sanctuary cities in 2016. So I took the numbers from 2015 and then compared them with 2016 on the number of just fentanyl deaths, nothing else.
Okay.
And what we found was an average of a 131% increase in the number of fentanyl deaths in those 8 sanctuary cities. That's more than double. And they try to say that that's not associated, but there is no other cause. There is no other cause. The only thing that changed is that they became sanctuary cities, which were a magnet for these criminals. And I just, one of the sheriffs said at the conference was, if I were a criminal and I wanted to commit crimes and get away with it in the U.S., I would go to a sanctuary city. They're magnets for these criminals. And that's where they go because they know that they're not going to be deported by ICE. And so we've actually created a new class of citizen who is actually above American citizens by doing this. And so, you know, these are the issues that we're fighting against. But the number of victims of these policies stretch in, I'm sure, into the millions. If we were able to get all the numbers on the victims of the rapes and the other violent assaults, shootings that were associated. But those are data sets that we can't really get our hands on because nobody was tracking it. What we do have, however, are the surviving family members of those who have died and the survivors of those attacks. And they're who we are reaching out to so that we can bring them forward and we can start having our stories heard. And I think if we keep doing this, eventually somebody's going to have to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where we're at the moment. But it's been an uphill battle every step of the way. Let me tell you, we get a lot of resistance. And I can't even begin to tell you some of the hateful things people have said to angel families, that things I would never think to say to a grieving parent, because they know that our message is strong and they don't want it to get out there. But the one thing every American has in common, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat, doesn't matter if you're a Republican or you're nonpartisan, is we all love our children and we want to protect them. And right now they're not safe. And we need to get together on, and this needs to be a bipartisan effort, and they need to do what's right for the American people. We're not saying that we want to attack asylum seekers, but we absolutely don't want criminals in our midst to harm our children, our families, and our communities. And I don't think that that's a point anybody can disagree with. But somehow, we're still meeting up with resistance. So that's kind of what's been, you know.
Wow. That is, I hate to, every time I feel like every show, I'm like, I'm not going to say wow. And then I talk to a guest and they just give me so much data. And there's nothing else I can say. Wow, that is, there's so much to unpack with everything that you're talking about. Good grief.
Oh, it's scary. It's, yeah, I look at my grandchildren and I'm afraid for the world that they're going to encounter.
Me too.
When
I'm terrified.
Older. And if you look at even programming that's been going on, I just saw yesterday that one of the Netflix children's shows is going to start to feature a non-binary character.
Oh, of course.
And, you know, I mean, this is trying to put into my grandchildren's head their version of what they think a family or, you know, our society should be. And that's not up to them. That mm-hmm. I think that's up to us as a society to decide what we will and will not find acceptable. And to the parents and family of these children, what we do and do not teach them. But they've completely taken over are trying to take over that role. And, you know, the worst part about this drug epidemic, I think, is the drug culture that has been pushed on our young people by our own society.
Yes.
You know, there's a show on VH1 called Cartel Kids. And it actually glamorizes these cartel members and their children and these lavish lifestyles that they lead. We have concerts like Coachella and Burning Man, these electric light concerts that you see. They have one in Vegas called the Electric Daisy Carnival. These aren't concerts that you and I would remember from when we were young, where someone might be in the parking lot sneaking, you know, a joint before they go into the venue. No. These are specifically set up for drug use.
Sure.
Burning Man is a 2-week long debacle in the desert where all they do are drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And the police know it. The public knows it. Why is it allowed to continue?
I think it's the money that's backing those concerts. Every one of those has got some major backing. And I would hazard a guess to a lot of government funding backing these things, too. I mean, one of these things, I was kind of making data points while you were talking, and there's so many, I'll forget most of them. But I don't know any Latin, but there's one phrase that I always recall. It's qui bono. It basically means who benefits. who gains? And while you were talking about this, you know, the drug cartels from the south of the border coming in. I mean, all I was thinking about was the Air America trade from Vietnam when they were putting the heroin in the bodies of American soldiers and shipping them back. And I'm thinking, huh, maybe they just figured out they don't even need to fly across the Pacific. They can just drive up and the CIA can get their black ops money. Because, I mean, there's obvious examples of the Air America thing. There's been C-130s crash full of drugs that are just, yeah. Huh, where'd that C-130 come from? Well, there's only one spot that really has these. It's America. So, I mean, kind of thinking maybe the reason it's not stopping and probably won't stop is because somebody's making some money and they're probably paying off these politicians that are probably paying off everybody else to just keep their mouth shut and just keep, sadly, sacrificing the men, women, and children of America to their despotism.
Yes, it's absolutely right. And I have no doubt that you're on the right track. If this, you know, when there's a shooting at a school, we have a March for Our Lives event. And, sure. And I don't want to minimize the loss of those lives at all, but in any way. But yet we have lost 250,000 people to one cause, and there is not even a ripple. But instead, what they did is they labeled it an opioid epidemic because they knew if they said heroin and fentanyl, it would point directly at that border, and that's not the narrative that they wanted to put out to the public. Mm-hmm. And they know that there was no rise in prescription deaths. They knew this, yet they still pushed this. And as a result of them pushing opioid epidemic, what they did is they pushed valid pain patients into the arms of the dealers waiting on the street. The dealers that they allowed to come here in the first place. So this is like, it's like a roadmap. And the only thing we need to find out, and that I would love to find out, is who's in that first and last square.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two. But I've often wondered, you know, I wish we could follow the money. I wish I were a forensic accountant and I could somehow do that, because, you know, we would be able to find out so much. But there was another point I was going to make, and it's kind of gotten washed out of my mind at the moment. But it was about, you have to help me here.
Oh, that's all right. There's so many dots to throw out here. While you were talking, it sort of jogged my memory to a previous guest I had on way early on named Michael De Leon, who I believe is from New Jersey and ended up in North Carolina and getting into all kinds of drug issues, going to prison. Finally, other side of the rainbow, he's a Christian who tours schools now, trying to shake people out of this drug culture that's been just omnipresent now, because I believe kind of similar to your daughter's situation, he had an injury and then he got on the prescription meds from there. And then, of course, kind of like to your point, the doctors wouldn't prescribe him anymore. And then he went down the illegal road and doctor shopping and all this and that.
Well, you know, and the thing that was one of the points I was going to make was the drug culture is, you know, you look at events like Coachella. Coachella is another one. And what's it amazes me is you'll see all these social media sites glamorizing these celebrities that, yes, go to these events, and oh, this is someplace you want to be. And the minute that they step foot there, there's people walking around that have the drugs and they're selling the drugs. They know the drugs are there. All they need to do is have people there to get them, but they don't, because they want this culture to exist.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have this culture where they promote the use, and then people want to look at, and this is one of the messages I got about my daughter. And of course, this person didn't know Tiffany's story. She said, if your daughter wasn't a crackhead, she'd be alive. Well, you know, in retrospect, first of all, you don't know my daughter's story. So I took it with a grain of salt. But the other thing is no, that's not true, because if our culture hadn't made it acceptable or glamorized to the point where they want to do it, to me, that's the same thing as putting it in their hand.
Oh yeah.
And that's what's happened. The morality bar has just fallen off the scale in the U.S. And what they're promoting to our kids is just, it's gone beyond dangerous. I just saw yesterday there was a case, and it's a different topic, but it just falls on the morality issue of a 7-year-old whose parents were in court because he wanted to do a gender change. They diagnosed a 7-year-old with gender dysphoria. Did you read that
I heard that
article?
story. Yeah, it's out of Texas, I believe.
And the jury actually agreed with the mother, and the father is not, now he has to have supervised visitation, and they're going to start this child on drugs to, block puberty at 7 years old. I mean, every scientific study and every psychological study there is has proven beyond any shadow of a doubt that a 7-year-old is incapable of making such life-changing, life-altering, permanent decisions.
Yep.
And yet they just gave that to a 7-year-old. And so what they're teaching our kids right now is terrifying to me. But you can't then blame them whenever they partake in the culture that you created and say, well, you got what you deserve. No, I don't think so. I disagree with that mindset altogether. And frankly, in this group of people that you're seeing on this far left liberal side, particularly like people within Antifa, I could feel fairly confident that if you went through and drug tested them, probably 90% of them would fail,
Oh, yeah.
because the drug culture is very heavy in them. And with the legalization in Denver, in Colorado, of marijuana, now they're pushing to legalize magic mushrooms.
Oh, yeah.
And there's talk of setting up heroin user houses, completely dismissing the history of the opium houses in the early 1900s because, history doesn't teach us anything.
No.
And so there's all these ideas where they're going to promote the use rather than try to prevent the use of very damaging, chemicals. I can't understand why we would allow anybody to promote self-harm, but we are. And not we, but society and these greedy corporations and politicians, these corrupted politicians who know the damage and simply don't care. Nancy Pelosi walked right by three angel parents asking to speak to her as if they didn't even exist. And her office assistant gave them the card and said, contact us, we'll meet with you. And they never heard back from her, even though they had called repeatedly. Because she doesn't want to hear these stories nor acknowledge it, because then she'd have to acknowledge her own flawed thinking. And, I guess their agenda matters more than American people. But,
I'm glad you touched on that cultural element because that's something, perhaps it's the bias I have because my day job deals with studying culture quite a bit, but I've thought that for quite a long time. I mean, not just to connect dots to the CIA again, I mean, they were the ones that were supplying the drugs in the late 50s, early 60s with programs like Midnight Climax and others where they were giving LSD to people and then they were peddling LSD on college campuses and all this stuff. And then, I mean, the culture is key to me because you began to see that in the 60s where it was this booming revolution. Oh, it's the cultural revolution. It's free drugs and free sex and fight the man. And then it's proliferated each generation and each decade. I mean, I feel like I must be the oldest person in the world because I look at TV very rarely now, and I don't watch anything from this century hardly. But when I do, it's just so disturbing because. And my wife hates watching anything with me because I'm like, there's propaganda again. They're normalizing this. They're just peddling that. And it's just so sick how, kind of to your point, like 20, 30 years ago, they might have hinted at something like this in a movie or a song or whatever. And now it's like, yeah, we're talking about there's songs about doing coke and doing all these other drugs, all the sitcoms, all the movies. That's just the baseline is everybody smoking weed and drinking, and then the really cool people are doing the more illicit drugs. So, I mean, of course, they've moved that proverbial Overton window on over. So we've gone from a straight-laced society to this just complete Sodom and Gomorrah hell. So, I mean, I'm totally in agreement. I'm like, yeah, what do you expect to happen? Of course, the kids, and this kind of connects to the singing element, because I don't watch this stuff. I hate it. But my wife watches some of these singing shows, and my daughter loves to sing, so she'll watch a little bit of it here and there. But I was cooking like breakfast the other day, and my wife was watching. I think it was, I don't know. There's only like two of the big singing shows. You know which ones I'm talking about. But anyway, it was doing a little montage of whoever the singers were that were about to come up, and of course they threw in a trans angle. It was a brother and sister, and now it was a brother and brother, because one of these 15, 14-year-olds decided to go through a transition. So now, you know, and I was just like, cut that off. I don't want to hear that.
Well, yeah, and it is normalization, and that's the whole point of it. The thing of it is that, and they don't want to talk about this, but there's significant research that indicates that people who've gone through these gender changes have, in fact, found themselves worse off than when they started.
Yeah.
Because there is a deep psychological element to this that, and in my opinion, here's in my viewpoint, is the look at the substance abuse disorders. If you look at the areas that are the most depressed, that's where you find the highest indications of usage. And so there's a direct link between the quality of life and the use of these substances and then their coping mechanisms. And in the case of someone who has gender dysphoria, I feel that's the same thing, that this is a coping mechanism, but it never really addresses the real problem, you know. And I talked to, and she's someone I ended up meeting on Twitter, but we converse on a semi-regular basis. And she had told me she calls herself a transservative. But here's what's interesting about her is that she is a female who identifies as, the way it ended up being explained is that she's female.
Gotcha.
But she feels she's a man who inside is a man who identifies as a female, even though she's female. This is how confused they have gotten our society. And I said to her, could it possibly just be that you're a female who happens to enjoy some pursuits that are generally male? And there's nothing wrong with that, you know? But this is how confused she is, that she actually feels that she is a male inside because of certain things that she likes. We had a name for that when we were growing up. We called them Tom girls.
Sure.
And there was nothing wrong with that. You know, you want to climb a tree, climb a tree. And nobody thought anything of it. But now they've got to label everything. And so this female who actually is just a female will tell you that she is actually trans, that she's a female who feels she's male, but she's a female. And so this is just a great example of how they have twisted the minds of, you know, normal people and into thinking they have to label themselves to fit into some group. And it's suddenly become a fashion statement to be, you know, bisexual. It's suddenly fashionable to be a lesbian. A friend of mine's daughter, who had shown no signs whatsoever of being a lesbian ever in her life, she'd always liked boys, suddenly 16 years old, when all this LGBTQ stuff comes out, makes the announcement that I think I'm a lesbian. And she actually did. She dated a female for a little bit, but guess what? The fashion wore off and she's back to dating boys again. So she said, I'm actually not a lesbian and I'm not even bisexual. But you know what? It was cool at school.
Yeah.
To be a lesbian.
I mean, that's the problem. So much of this stuff, I think it's just exposure. I mean, if your environment is just inundated with this mess, of course you're going to start thinking about it. I mean, perhaps I was not very introspective, but I mean, to the 7-year-old boy, I mean, when I was 7, I was thinking about G.I. Joes and He-Man and like playing with my friends. It never really entered my brain to start questioning my internal gender or sex or what have you.
And in that case, I think the mother needs a serious psychological evaluation because I think there's a lot more parental influence in about her trying to have inclusion, or rather to be treated special for her child. Then, you know, instead of wanting her son to be, you know, a scholar to win the science award, she's decided that she's going to be proud of her son because he's going to be a transsexual. You know, when my youngest was seven, she went, and of course they were a lot more, not quite as mature as kids are today, but my youngest son, he wanted to be, you know, blue on Blue's Clues. I mean, that was his, like, that was like his thing. You know, what are we going to do next? You know, are we going to start transforming these children into their superhero characters?
Yeah, then we can go the trans species route.
Well, exactly. I mean, why not? We're doing everything else. You know, there comes a point where people have to stop and say, you know what, this isn't such a good idea. And I feel like we've gone from acceptance of, and first of all, I don't think anybody needs acceptance of their sexuality. I don't have to approve of who you're sleeping with, because my approval doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And so there's this lack in society of people being able to realize that they don't have to have everyone's approval for what they do. And they don't need to try to assuage whatever guilt it is I think they feel for what they're doing and try to put the finger at me, because I don't care who they're sleeping with.
Exactly.
And if that's offensive to you, then I'm sorry, but I have better things to do in my life than to concern myself with a stranger's sexual partner. And so, you know, and we look at these gay pride parades, and I created a video with excerpts from them because it is just debauchery in the streets. And people are bringing their small children to watch these people parade around. In some cases, even though public nudity is supposed to be exempt, who are, you know, publicly nude in certain ways that are unacceptable. And there's all kinds of fetishism being celebrated. I have a picture of a little boy who is looking at this guy who's all dressed in SD and sadomasochism gear. Who's got in front of him four men on their hands and knees with leashes tied up like dogs. And, you know, and the boy's like the man's naked butt is right in this little boy's face. And the kid's just looking at him with this disgusted look on his face. And two thoughts came into my head is, what are we teaching our children? And what parent would have their child in an event like that? When did that become okay? I think parenting classes should become mandatory in the U.S. Because so many people have no clue how to parent. And I think that's part of what has created this generation of very narcissistic, advantaged, unappreciative youth who have taken for granted, very much taken for granted, all the blessings and the benefits they have living in this country. And I think maybe a mandatory 30-day visit to a third world country might not be a bad idea. You know how we had that mandatory fourth grade field trip where camping or something? You know, how about we make a senior year? And that's something I'd be willing to put my tax dollars behind.
That's not a bad idea.
See how they live in other countries. And then come home and be thankful that they have so much here instead of wanting to constantly be victims, constantly be unappreciative of all the blessings and benefits we have. You know, one thing that gets me is with this new agenda they have going on, they always talk about the equal distribution of wealth. And you know this, World Order. And I have told a few people who were very shocked, young people, to know when I said our poorest people here in the United States live 600% better than the people in third world countries. And when they talk about equal distribution of wealth, do you really think that they're going to take that money from Bill Gates and give it to you? Oh, no, no. That money will be going out into the world. It's not going to be going from theirs to yours, because the only way for them to get equal distribution is for everyone here to get a lot poorer.
Yeah, that's it. It's not bringing everyone up. It's bringing everyone down. That's the game plan.
Yeah. And they don't seem to understand that. There's this idea amongst them that I'm going to get free healthcare. I'm going to get free housing. I'm going to get free education. I'm going to get free. And they're thinking they're going to have this same quality of life that they have now. And when you try to tell them otherwise, they'll argue with you up and down and they don't want to accept it. So, you know, and that's part of the culture as well. So we've got just a complete, I think everything's just going downhill. It has. And we have to either get together and take a stand against this or let it wash over us like a wave. And frankly, I don't even know if we're going to be able to get it in time at this point. It's gone so far. I think it, like drugs, it just snuck in quietly.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, it was a tidal wave. And the fentanyl deaths are continuing to rise, by the way. They're not getting better. In fact, the fentanyl has become more deadly. We're finding carfentanil, which is, it's an elephant tranquilizer. And they're finding that in drugs for people. And so I put my head in my hands and say, what do we do with this? And why aren't they talking about it? The DEA has numbers, but they're being silenced. You know, ICE has, and the DHS have numbers, but they're being silenced. And even, I don't know if you watched any of the hearings with them, but they're being denigrated and ridiculed when they're in front of our congressman testifying. And I really have deep fear for where things are going to be 10 years from now if we don't get a handle on it. And I just remembered the fact I wanted to share.
Sure, go for it.
California just made it, I can't remember which city, made it legal for illegal aliens to vote in federal elections.
Hmm.
Do you know which city that was? I want to say San Francisco.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Don't quote me on it. I'm sorry?
I said it wouldn't surprise me. I heard that too, but I can't think of the city either.
But I want you to think, if you will, that this is the opening for those cartel members to actually get their foot into our government that way. I mean, it won't just be them pouring money into the politicians' pockets, but they'll actually be able to put representatives up in front, because once they're voting legally, then the next step will be that they can have candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always a progression, I'm sure you know.
I mean, I always call them the protected classes. There are so many protected classes in America, and luckily I don't fall into any of them, I guess. But I mean, to your point, I mean, you know, veterans can't get health care. They can't get their school money, their GI Bill money's on time, and so forth and so on. And just normal citizens on the street, they don't even have to be a veteran. But you can come up from the South or the North or even on a boat, and they will just sweep you up and take you to a food and shelter and give you a bus fare across the country.
Oh, they'll even give you airfare.
No questions asked.
Here, I'm in Akron, Ohio, and my neighborhood, they renamed it. They gave it a new title. They're calling it a multinational neighborhood.
Oh, great.
And in a section where I won't go, which luckily isn't very close to my house, they have brought in refugees. Now, in my own neighborhood, I have a lot of Nepalese who came after the earthquake in Nepal,
mm-hmm.
and they're wonderful people. And these people actually lost their homes. They had nothing, and that's why they are here. Some chose to come back, go back. Some chose to stay. But now they're bringing in Somalian refugees. And I have to tell you that amongst the Somalians, there's a lot of bad eggs. And I don't think people understand that we're bringing a third world culture into our culture, and they bring those same third world tendencies with them. Now, that's not to say that they're all bad, because that would be a misstatement. But, you know, you're trying to mix two different worlds. And if you're going to do that, you have to do it incrementally. You cannot just suddenly pour all these people together and expect these third world residents to rise to our societal standards, because their cultural standards are different than ours. Same with Muslims. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Middle Eastern Muslims, you know, they come here and they bring those cultures with them that are typical. That's why there was a video not long ago on that was going around showing that one of their cows had escaped from a Muslim meat shop, I think in Michigan, and they chased it down and slaughtered it in the Home Depot parking lot in the middle of the day.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, and people were appalled, and I said, but this is common where they come from. That's what you're not understanding.
Yes.
Is, you know, we have to realize that we're expecting them to have the same life standards that we have, but they haven't had a chance to even try to adjust to the way we live here, if they intend to at all. And so, you know, this is causing so much stress. And I mean, the country is completely divided. The one thing that offends me the greatest, though, is when we talk about border security, we talk about trying to stop these drugs and these dangerous people from coming into our country, and the Democrats immediately start talking about these poor asylum seekers.
Oh, yeah.
Who aren't even the people of who are in the conversation. In the judiciary hearing yesterday, and I'm not sure which congressman it was, or senator, I'm sorry. Oh, she was the one from Hawaii. Her name escapes me right now, but every time they started talking, these are victims who have lost their children. And when one of the, you know, Marianne Mendoza finishes telling her story, this woman comes back with a story about how this illegal immigrant who was a worker taking care of people saved this family from, you know, this shooter.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, but that's not the person we were talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about the three-time deported violent criminal who was released by Sanctuary City policies that went on to murder Marianne's son. And she tried to combine the two. And I find that to be the most offensive thing of all because, you know, when someone comes here and presents themselves for asylum, they're actually following the process. Whether or not they're being honest about that, I don't know, but that's up to DHS to decide and a judge. But when they come here illegally and commit crimes, they try to affiliate the two as one. And that's their way of trying to avert, you know, the attention away from border security. And so, yeah, that makes me think there's got to be an ulterior motive. And who's benefiting from the drugs that is willing to keep this drug highway running? I mean, they call it the drug corridor for a reason, and it still continues. And that's something that I think a lot of people should start asking themselves. Why do they keep associating the two when they're completely separate issues? All asylum seekers are not criminals, and neither one has anything to do with securing the border. Why do we all have to go through metal detectors and x-ray machines to get on an airplane? But they don't require that at the border for people to come into the country, bringing God knows what. I mean, the way things are right now, somebody could import a nuclear bomb and nobody would know it. There's sections of the border I've seen personally where they are beaten in rows, where they just drive right around it. I mean, there's sections that have nothing and it's just open desert and they can just drive right through and they do. And I can't even tell you how horrible that is to me that they would leave that open and then tell us we can't get on an airplane unless we go through an x-ray machine. Well, what's the point?
It's that cognitive dissonance I was talking about. It's like the average Joe Public's going on the plane going, well, I better go get molested by TSA and then go through this cancer body scanner.
Yeah.
And I'm always thinking, they're the only ones doing this. There's millions of people coming in the border right now that aren't even screened in any capacity whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I've got to do my due diligence and go through this cancer machine and get a stranger touch my genitals. I mean, what in the world?
Exactly. And nobody is actually saying why is it like this? I mean, you know, if you're going to lock your house up, you make sure you shut the back door. And they just intercepted those terrorists who were en route to the United States. And how many more got in that we don't even know about? Because these people that they're catching, they're from all over the world. They're not just coming from, you know, South and Central or from Central America and Mexico. They're coming from, you know, Africa and Nigeria. And they have some from China. And I mean, because the word is out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the other thing I want to know is how George Soros can continue to fund these operations where they go out and pass out flyers to these people to say, oh, you'll get free stuff if you go to the United States. And they cross through four countries and then they get here for asylum. You know, and I'm thankful that the president put forth the effort, and I'm not sure if it passed or not. I haven't checked, where they have to seek asylum in the first country they come to. Because why would you cross four countries for safety when you can just go to the one right next to you? It makes no sense. Well, of course it doesn't make sense because the whole thing has been manufactured. And there's a lot of money behind it. Who was paying for the buses that were bringing them up? I mean, they have video of them getting on and off buses. They weren't walking those caravans. They were getting transported. And who paid for that? These are things that are, you would think investigative journalists would be looking into, but they're not.
And I think so.
You know, I think Soros funded a lot of it, but I also think the cartels did. I think that was a way for them to get their people in here amongst the crowds, and nobody knew it. Because, you know, if you look at the DEA maps prior to 2014, they didn't have not even a quarter of the number of known locations of these cartels. It was only after catch and release. So there's a lot of evidence to prove the case. It's just now getting people to see it.
Wow. So. I'm going to try to contain myself to not go off on a complete education is a cult jag. But I mean, I think to connect a lot of things you were just saying, I think that's the issue. I mean, I think you've had at least, I'll conservatively say like 70 years of complete indoctrination. So each generation just kicks the ball down the road. So, you know, of course, we're 2019. So let's take the kids out to the gay pride parade. That sounds like a great idea. And let's let them watch the trans show on TV, because what's the worst that could happen? Yeah, because we're all smoking weed and drinking anyway. So, I mean, it's fine. Let's just have some of that at the picnic. I mean, sadly, it's been so ingrained in the culture and in the education system is so rife with communism. So, I mean, it's kind of like, well, yeah, the professor said this is good and we ought to be tolerant. So let's take Jimmy to the gay pride parade this weekend.
Yeah.
It's just so sick.
But well, you know, I went to, and I was thrilled to get to go because it was the last, one of their last concerts with the all the band members was in AC/DC at a Denver show.
Okay, cool.
So, you know, and I loved them back in high school, and I'd never seen them in concert, so I was really excited to be able to go. And right after that show, actually, the lead singer quit singing. So I actually got to see his last performance.
Oh, that's great.
But anyway, and I'm a smoker. I smoke cigarettes. And so we were relegated to this little corner outside the doors in this little gated area outside, you know, where we had to go because heaven forbid our cigarette smoke affect anyone. Yet I was choking. I mean, it wasn't a little bit of pot smoke. I was choking on the clouds of pot smoke that filled that arena.
Yeah.
And I just thought, how ironic, you know, they don't want anybody to have to breathe in my nasty cancer causing, you know, cigarettes, but you know, let's not worry about the three times worse drug infested cancer causing smoke from the marijuana. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
And it just, like you said, this cognitive dissonance between people, it's like they don't even connect these things. And the thing is that it wasn't even, they weren't even trying to hide it.
Oh, that's the truth.
They're searching everybody coming in the door. They people had bags of weed and the security guard put it right back in their purse and let them keep going in. So, you know, again, it's just this promotion of smoking's bad, but smoking weed is okay.
That's
and we
right.
can even do it inside the arena. It's all right. No problem. And nobody thought twice of it. And, you know, you brought up the music industry and they're a huge, you know, pusher of the same culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just television and, you know, concert events, but it's actually stuff that's going on at concerts. Look at Miley Cyrus. I mean, she was on stage bragging about, in fact, I think she was smoking weed during one of her concerts on stage. And so they promote it. And then you look at all of the people in both the music industry and Hollywood who have died from drug overdoses. And you would think that this would become something since they've become so socially and politically active, they would be concerned about, but they're not. And so that just speaks to a larger problem that we really need to address. As we continue to go down this road, we're going to see the deaths increase if people don't wake up. And it's easy to ignore until it's your child. And you know, I can't even tell you how many parents I've spoken to who have gone through this long addictive process with their child, the toll it takes on the family in general. is insane. I can't even begin to describe to you the suffering of the parents, the siblings, the destruction within the house when someone goes through this addictive process. And so much has been lost, and it's going to continue to get worse unless people start taking it seriously. So, you know, and that's going to be my mission. Tiffany absolutely would want me to help stop this from happening to someone else. And so that's what I intend to do. And hopefully with your show and with other shows and as the word gets out, people will start to take this more seriously and realize that the threat isn't down the street or in another city. The threat is in your neighborhood, and it could be your neighbor. You don't know, but these things do reach out. And I don't know too many people who haven't at least known of someone who's been affected within their community or their peer groups. And it's going to keep getting worse. So hopefully with all of this outreach and education, we might be able to make a dent. But that's the biggest thing right now, is just getting the word out and hopefully starting to fight back.
I couldn't agree more. I certainly hope people come to that realization. It's kind of ironic you mentioned that, you know, people don't seem to recognize these things until it really affects them. I think that's true of so many things, but especially this toxic drug culture that we are being forced into. I mean, I think a lot of people sort of have that stereotype, oh, it's this junkie on the corner. Well, like you see all over the big communist run cities, but it's also the doctors, the lawyers, the plumbers, the carpenters, like it's all these people that you probably wouldn't think of. It affects so many different people.
Oh, no, the college stereotypes are really into it. And they just did a study. The Center for Disease Control, they did a survey, and over 500,000 American high school students admitted to using heroin. Half a million. I mean, that's terrifying. And people don't realize heroin is not just, when they think of heroin, they think of that injecting the drug. No, it's not like that anymore. It can be smoked. It can be snorted. It can be injected. And in some cases, and they can even take it orally. They make it in pill form. I apologize for that. So it's not just what you think when, you know, in your mind, you think of that dirty needle in the back room.
Yeah.
That's not it. I've even seen it where they can take the substance on foil and burn it. And I've seen people lick it off of that. So the methods of entry, the fentanyl, what's frightening about that is that someone could be incapacitated so easily because it's tasteless. The pharmaceutical companies, their grade is a lot less potent than this illicit fentanyl, and they put a terrible taste to it, because most of the use for that is transdermal. And for cancer patients, I think at one point they were making kind of like lollipops, but I don't know if they're even making those anymore. But the transdermal patches have such it's even to smell it makes you feel ill. To prevent people from wanting to ingest it. But this fentanyl that they're putting out now, you could put it in someone's drink and they wouldn't know it was there. I mean, it's so dangerous and so deadly. And I can't stress enough how important it is that we get this under control before it gets worse. It's, to me, one of the most terrifying substances, and probably the worst one ever created since the nuclear bomb, in my opinion, because of its deadly and addictive qualities. I mean, pain control is great, but not at this price. And now that they have the formula and they're able to create it in these labs, we've entered a whole new game in the drug world. And the body count's going to continue to go up if we don't do something. So to parents, that's the message I want to get out to them is, your child can come into contact with this without even realizing it. We have officers who've been put in the hospital just from the transdermal effect of the drugs, just from a contact. So this is extremely serious, in my opinion. It's a health emergency. They've declared it a health emergency, but they haven't made it a national announcement to tell people that it's a health emergency. So hopefully, you know, we can get that out there.
I'm not giving anyone any ideas, but I'm kind of surprised that they don't have this in some sort of vaping form yet, because I feel like that's another, let's destigmatize and normalize everything, because I know you can get these people e-vaping weed and all this other mess now. So you don't even know what the heck, who's on what. You know, I'm in traffic sometimes, and there's like this plume comes out of a car, you know, like some bizarre Cheech and Chong movie. And I'm just going, is this person e-vaping? Are they on pot? Are they, I don't know. Luckily I'm sharing the road with, I don't know, because it's just a big plume of smoke coming out of the cab of this truck. And
well, yeah. And, you know, there's so many videos and news stories. There's just countless stories where, you know, people have come upon people unconscious in their cars, you know, and like I said, they always associate it with the needles, but, and they are vaping it too, by the way, just so you know. It's just insane. And, you know, these are all over the place, and people are like, oh, isn't that terrible? They don't realize that those same people that passed out of that car were just driving 5 minutes before to get where they are. And they might have come across you with your three children in the back seat. And like I said, the collateral damage is just unbelievable. And it's something that everyone should be afraid of, and something everyone should be demanding that this be, you know, addressed in a very aggressive way. You know, I know we've always talked about, everyone talks about this war on drugs that never seems to end, but this is one war that we can't afford to lose when it comes to these substances. You know, we could talk forever about the, you know, negative impacts of marijuana or whether or not it should be legalized, but nobody's dying from marijuana. These drugs can kill with a single use, and we can't address them in the way that we have the other, you know, narcotics or illegal drugs that are on the market. These are a special, you know, category that need a special task force strictly to deal with them. And I do mean in the most aggressive way possible.
Couldn't agree more. Well, I know we could talk forever. Is there anything that I'm leaving out or that you want to really hammer out there before we get off the air here?
I just want to reach out to any families who've been affected or lost loved ones due to these drugs. I want to tell them that your children were victims too. They didn't deserve to die. No one deserves to die for making a bad choice. And if that were the case, none of us would be here. We're trying to remove the shame and the stigma that's associated with these drugs and that image of this back alley, you know, throwaway people. These people's lives mattered. They mattered. The suffering of these families is something that, you know, can't be ignored any longer. So I'm actually in the process of putting together a group, and I wish I had all the details right now, but I don't. That's going to be strictly to work with and for the victims of these illegal drugs. And we hope to work both on a grassroots level with the victims themselves, with victim assistance, and also on the legislative level to try to get laws passed and actions done by our government that will protect our families and our children from these killer narcotics. But I want to tell these families not to be ashamed. And you can reach out to me. I'm on Twitter at Virginia Krieger. I'm on Facebook also under Angel Families United. And you can reach out to us there. We're here to give you a voice. This isn't just about Tiffany's stories. This is about all of their stories. And every single one of their lives matter. And even for those who are still struggling with addiction, you know, we have resources to get them in touch with people who can help them get treatment if they don't have any. You know, we're trying to do the best we can to start fighting back and help people in our community. So you can find me, or you can go to our webpage, angelfamilies.org, and you'll be able to contact us there as well. You know, don't be afraid to reach out, and please don't feel ashamed, because there's nothing to be ashamed of. Everyone runs through hard times and, you know, has made bad choices in their life. And, you know, we're here to help you.
I could not agree more. I echo those sentiments for sure. All right. Absolutely. I want to thank everyone for joining us today in the Anomic Age. Thanks so much to our guest, Virginia Krieger, for bringing her message of hope to this program. Please, like I said before, anomicage.com. You can find all things Virginia Krieger, all things Anomic Age, and all things all of our other guests as well. So if you're out there just running errands out and about and didn't get to jot all this information down, fear not, anomicage.com. You can find her information there. And angelfamilies.org, in case you missed that from a few moments ago. So, as I always end the show, you can't do everything, but you can absolutely do something. So, please try to get out there and make a difference and do your part. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age Project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to AnomicAge.com. That's AnomicAge.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm gonna go to bed.